From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project is underway, and here we are with, regrettably for all of us involved, an all-male little group of projectiles.
Yeah, we don't like that.
Projectors.
It's like old-timers' day. We used to just do the three of us for a long time.
It's old-timers. Oh, hey, here we are, boys. So anyway, I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. Himself, there he is.
How do you do?
And there is Ira Fussfeld, the publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York, and its affiliated publications. Sir,
good day.
Good day.
Three old guys with white hair.
Good day. What can you do?
Increasingly white.
White hair. You don't. I can't tell the hair there. You've got this animal sitting on your head. What is that hat?
It's a rabbit hat.
It's a rabbit hat.
Rabbit hat. And yesterday I had our wonderful receptionist, my assistant Dina. She made me a red star. So for those of you who are just listening to it, I put a red star on the front of it.
Comrade
but then
Chartok.
I went to my dentist, who has a very wonderful Russian lady working for him. And I took the red star off because I thought it might be the paramount insult to walk into a Russian.
Well, the only reason that Trump doesn't wear a Russian hat like that is because his hair essentially serves the same purpose.
No, we're not going to make fun.
Yeah, right, Rex. How do you know?
Let's not call that physical body shaming.
Body
we don't
shaming.
Want to do body shaming. Yeah, that's
right. His is part of the public domain.
All right, there are a lot of media issues to begin with. Why don't we actually start with a little bit of celebrity news? Megyn Kelly exiting NBC with probably $30 million is what's being reported now. You know, she's been off the air for some weeks.
Chump change.
$30 million. She had a $69 million deal last year when she left Fox News, but she didn't do well in the ratings. $30 million to go off the air. So I just want to mention something that Bill Gruskin, who's a professor at Columbia Journalism School, $30 million could pay years ago. Yes, sir. Could pay for the entire Texas Tribune for over 3 years, which is a wonderful news organization. ProPublica, the great not-for-profit news organization, 1 3/3 years. The Center for Investigative Reporting could go for 2.5 years on that $30 million.
Really, how about the Times Union?
For $30 million, well, my newsroom could go for quite a long period of time, let's say decades.
And WAMC, a very major public broadcaster, it could go, our budget every year is about $8 million.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so. You could run that household, my household, for 2 or 3 months on that.
There you go.
I want to ask you a question. Do you think that they're insured? You know, like in sports, they'll insure athletes if they get injured, that the team doesn't swallow the $100 million contract. You suspect there's an insurance policy?
I think there would be insurance, but I don't know how you would insure for bad ratings. Do you think that that's...
They'll insure anything. Lloyd's will insure anything for anything. But self-insurance is a word you hear a lot. These guys have a lot of money.
That's probably the point. I don't know that NBC, given, especially in an even-numbered year, with all the political ads, I don't know that they need to have insurance. Yeah. They probably just stow it away. Right.
Well, it will go down as one of the colossal missteps in the history of broadcasting, them bringing her over and thinking that they were going to find a place for her.
And the reason she was so popular there for a little while is that she got in Trump's face. Remember that? She got in Trump's face. So
a lot of the liberals felt she was the anti-Fox on Fox.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
But she wasn't. I mean, you could tell from day one that the format that they put her in was not her format.
Nor did her colleagues seem to like her. That's what chemistry is all about.
Yeah, difficult situation. Well, in any case, it does show that while it is NBC News, it's really a showbiz operation. And if you're not popular, you can't survive.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was listening to satellite radio on the way up this morning as we speak, and you flip from MSNBC, which is reporting on Trump and the various Trump stories of the day, and then I flipped over at 7 a.m. sharp to the Today Show station. And the first 10 minutes is about Thanksgiving travel and stuff that's not unimportant to people, but it was not the real hard news of the day. And it's interesting watching the distinction between two news organizations of the same company and how they approach it based on what they see their audience is.
So that's amazing, Ira, that you would be on our board at WMC and so disloyal that you would listen to Sirius.
Well,
radio,
I did listen to your commentary first.
Well, then they always call three times and they say, are you going to buy the Sirius that comes with your Prius? And I say, no. And they say, well, why not? We have this, 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 and this. And I say, because I run a wonderful public radio station, mm-hmm. and I don't want anything to do with you people.
Well, there you go. Take that. Serious.
Don't you see? That's what we call loyalty.
I'm trying to think of something that's humorous, and I can't.
What can you do? It's the Media Project. If you, by the way, want to share your views, media@wamc.org. Before we leave the Megyn Kelly line of talk entirely, and by the way, I'm kind of a fan of hers. She's a local product of the Capital Region, you know. Went to high school here, and I think she's a very smart and capable television presence. But I think it's undeniable that one of the reasons that she succeeded was because she projects well, she looks good on television. So the radio counterpart of that, I would think, is to sound good. And here is a journalist who says that NPR declined to air her reporting because she speaks with a foreign accent. Her name is Gisele Regatão. That would be a Brazilian. And she's a journalism professor at Baruch College in New York City, a former producer for WNYC, has been in the U.S. for about 20 years. She claims that she was denied an opportunity to be on NPR because she speaks with a foreign accent. Alan, you run a radio station. What do you think about how people need to sound? How big a deal is that?
Well, it's very interesting because there are all kinds of dialects on NPR. I'll be honest with you. I think NPR does a good job. Sometimes I don't think they're always great. You and I disagree about that. But, you know, you have to take into consideration what somebody is going to hear. Now, there are many different dialects. Some of them, for example, could be African-American. And I think they're pretty well represented on NPR. So I think you're sitting there at the radio and you're saying, I can't understand this guy or I can't understand this person. And you would say, so if I can't understand him or her, somebody else can't also. So we need somebody who people can understand.
You know, I was listening to a broadcast of Marketplace from PRI, listening to WAMC.
See, now he's listening to public radio.
Now that he listens, he pretends he doesn't. But
how
he
about
listens.
That? Yeah. Oh, I listen all the time. Yeah. I'm a great fan.
Yeah.
And I was annoyed. I actually wanted to turn off the radio, not because of a foreign accent, but because they had a young female reporter who was exhibiting vocal fry. You know, she dropped her voice at the bottom. At the end of every sentence,
vocal fry.
Like this. And this is a little thing that
That's
young
great.
People particularly have, vocal fry.
Well, how about upward inflection?
Upward inflection drives me crazy,
how about
too.
How about all the likesters? In other words, like, mm-hmm. like, and like.
So you wouldn't hire somebody who did a lot of that like stuff because it's just annoying. And I really didn't like vocal fry. And it does seem to me that there is something to be said. Not that you want to necessarily have a dominant syntax that has to be a part of your delivery, but I think there is something valid to be said in the same way that in print, I don't want somebody whose verbiage constructs pieces in writing so awkwardly that people have a tough time reading it.
Well, I'll tell you a story, for whatever it's worth. We have in our North Country the most brilliant reporter you could possibly imagine, covers North Country in Vermont, Pat Bradley.
Mm-hmm.
And she has a voice that is not, you know, one which you would think would be for everyone. And in the beginning, I would get a lot of letters about her. And now she is beloved. Beloved because of that accent of hers. And not only that, I mean, people love her. And when she went into a press conference, there was the governor, I believe, of Vermont, who when she came in the room, he imitated her. well, here's Pat Bradley. But the point really is, I've always been a big supporter of the idea that what we think of as acceptable is crazy, like Peter Rodino. Remember him, Peter mm-hmm. Rodino?
Yeah, the Watergate
chair. Little Watergate
chair.
Guy. Mm-hmm. And he was certainly not Bruce Wayne. He didn't have a square jaw. But he became a hero. Same thing with Sam Ervin in the same hearing. So I think sometimes we make a mistake and think only people who, you know, look like you, Rex, because you're a very handsome, tall guy.
It really helps me a lot on the radio.
Yeah. But there was a culture shock when broadcast and TV started using women not just as anchors on the news, but as announcers, as the voiceovers. It just sounded funny, and it didn't sound authoritative. It wasn't the deep-throated Ted Baxter voice on the air. And as the years have passed, people have gotten used to it, so it's not a culture shock. But you still will hear people say, gee, that's sort of like a chalk scratching on a blackboard kind of thing. But it's just evolution. People have gotten used to it.
Well, yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry, Rex.
No, I was about to change the topic. You have more to say on this?
Well, only one thing, and that is there's a certain amount of sexism that enters into all of this.
There was, and is.
And still is,
yes.
In that if you take a look at the women who are generally the anchors and others, even on CNN, everybody seems to be quite gorgeous, with a few exceptions. But for the most part, I think people are hired because of their looks. I think maybe more so than because of the way that men are hired. And I don't think that's right.
I wish that we had Kalen Brown and
Judy Patrick.
Judy Patrick are off today, but we'll get back to this topic, I'm sure, one of these days. Moving along to what is really, of course, a dominant story among a lot of media people this week is the Washington Post writer Jamal Khashoggi, who was murdered. The CIA has concluded that it was on the orders of the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia. The president says, basically, big deal, that Saudi Arabia is our great ally, and he disagrees with the CIA, says we don't know really what happened. The Washington Post publisher, Fred Ryan, said that it's, quote, a betrayal of long-established American values of respect for human rights and the expectation of trust and honesty in our strategic relationships. And he calls it the president's surrender to state-ordered murder will only make it a more difficult, a more dangerous place, this world.
You know, that's an extraordinary statement, and I think I certainly subscribe to it. But what do I know? All I know is that Republican senators who have been feckless up to this point in terms of overseeing this administration and who have been there for this president no matter what are upset over this. And I think that's because they're reflective. Don't you, Ira? They're reflective of what the American people are thinking about this. At least one of them said, well, you know, when we give up the moral high ground, America gives up everything. And so I do think there are press implications because this is a media project here. And this guy wrote for the Washington Post. But I do think that this may be a tipping point.
Well, there are enormous press implications. It's not overstating it to say if people around the world can see that the murder of a journalist for the Washington Post essentially went without any retribution, then it opens the door for others to follow suit. And there may be any number of others who would like to follow suit. You know, this whole business with Trump, he sees this as a transactional circumstance where he does not want to take a chance at losing any business he may be getting from Saudi Arabia, personally or privately. Parenthetically, he claims now that there is no personal money that he gains from Saudi Arabia, and all you have to do is look up the videotape and find any number of speeches he made where he was boasting about how much money he got from Saudi Arabia.
Absolutely.
But he does not have, as has often been said, the empathy card. He does not have the sympathy card. He's willing to dispose of this one human being because it's only one human being, and look at all of his other implications. And the U.S. has got the ability and has always used the ability to be the shining light around the world, and Trump has turned the light down, and that's terrible on any number of levels.
Well put, Ira. Ira Fussfeld from Kingston, Alan Shartok and Rex Smith here with you. We're the Media Project this week.
Three turkeys sitting around waiting for Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I know. I'm still mad because you said how handsome Rex is, and I can't disagree with you.
You're terrific, Ira.
Oh, man. Hey, how is this blind date? Oh, she's got a nice personality.
Look at this nice. We got a record album here that our producer David Gustina brought in with that other Rex Smith. You know, he had this. He was a one-hit wonder. You Take My Breath Away, and he had an album called Sooner or Later in about 1977 or something like that. And here's his picture, a nice young man with a whole lot of hair.
Well, all I know is you go to the Google and you look up Rex Smith, you don't come in first.
No.
Although Rex Smith today is, this Rex Smith is more powerful and important than that Rex Smith.
Terribly powerful, I tell you. Wow.
Well, you are.
You've never had your press pass removed.
I have not. You know, what do you think about that? Acosta gets his press pass back. This is obviously a victory, right?
Well, Well, I have a few thoughts on that. The first is that this is a sort of a game here. Clearly, the judge said, you know, you have to give him back his press pass. But they say, okay, but we're going to come up with rules of behavior. And if you violate those rules of behavior, we're going to take away your press passes again. Now, remembering that Donald Trump needs Jim Acosta as much as Jim Acosta needs Donald Trump, which is why he called on him at that famous interchange. He didn't have to call on him. He called on him knowing full well what he's going to get. And then he got him kicked out. And now we see that this has come up again. But there will be certainly another act here. Acosta will try to ask a follow-up question. They will yank his credentials one more time, and people will be watching the shiny object once more and not watching what's really going on with that Trump administration.
Well, do you have any problem, either of you, with the notion of the White House making rules?
You know, only in that I don't trust the enforcement.
Right.
It seems to me, so the fact that they're saying that the reporters have to ask only one question before yielding the floor, follow-up questions may only be permitted at the discretion of the White House, yielding the floor may be surrendering the microphone, I think that's a little bit intense. But what's of greater concern is that there really aren't White House press briefings anymore. In fact, who was the WAG? That's one of those little headline terms of WAG.
Yeah.
Who was the person who pointed out that a turkey has made more appearances in the White House press briefing room this month than Sarah Huckabee Sanders has?
As I said the last time I was here, first of all, I thought Acosta was ambushed, number one. And that number two, I didn't think that the questions that he asked were difficult or nasty or disrespectful. What I'm waiting to see is the day, finally, with this president, that a reporter starts asking a question and the president starts cutting him off. Then the reporter will say, excuse me, sir, I haven't finished asking my question, which might be construed as being nasty or disrespectful. But nevertheless, it's true. And secondly, what would be less likely to happen is after he gives a convoluted, winding answer, the reporter says, are you kidding?
Yeah.
Answer the question.
But that wasn't my question. If anybody remembers, the most memorable White House press conference in my time was the last one that George W. Bush did before launching the invasion of Iraq. And I have always been impressed by the fact that reporters tried to hold his feet to the fire. They really did. They tried to say, but wait a minute, what is the evidence of the weapons of mass destruction? What's going on here? And he, of course, didn't answer the question. He answered what he wanted to say, which is what politicians are trained to do. Say what you want to say. Don't pay attention to the questions. But in a real White House press conference, you get to ask the follow-up question. You get to try to hold his feet to the fire. You don't get that opportunity with this president.
Yeah. No, but the example that you just gave, George W. Bush might not have liked the question and may have had trouble answering the question, but he didn't try to get the reporter barred from the White House.
Right. Interesting. And Acosta, I think you're right, Alan, that the problem is this has distracted people from the issues of the day. It has given the White House an opportunity to spend a couple of weeks making their anti-media points, getting everybody to pay attention to that. So here's a big story, ladies and gentlemen. Lock her up. That is, as the Washington Post has revealed, Ivanka Trump sent hundreds of emails using a personal email account, many of them in violation of federal records rules.
Right. Now, a lot of people are going to be saying, Rex, so what? Who cares? You know, that doesn't matter. But when you think about the chutzpah here, the unbelievable gall of a president running this huge two-year campaign against Hillary Clinton for having done things like that. Not exactly like she had her own servers and this and that. But the fact is, we have a public records law for a reason, so that we can hold people accountable. And if the historians and others want to see what was going on, they can. And she has violated that. And, you know, it's going to be another big thing when the Democrats take over the House of Representatives. They're going to be doing a hearing on that.
Yeah, and they've actually already signaled that that will be the case. I just hope that the media response to this isn't to treat the Ivanka Trump emails as though this is a major international incident. To say, we were wrong to cover the Hillary Clinton emails in the way that we did. I mean, you think in particular about how, wasn't it Chris Wallace of NBC that just went after
Fox.
Her during the campaign? Fox, sorry,
yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Fox, who went after her during the campaign over and over and over again on that issue, which was virtually a non-issue, especially by the time it got to the campaign. So let's not get too big on Ivanka. The fact is, Fox and Friends, for example, as Clive Woodson in the Washington Post pointed out, Fox and Friends spent months blasting Hillary Clinton's email use. Ivanka Trump got 25 seconds.
Well, you know, nature abhors a vacuum. We all spend a lot of time looking at the two major cable channels or the three major cable channels, and we see what they're going to do. And this one hit with a sort of a velocity, Rex, that I thought was a little overplayed, but that's what they did.
The Ivanka, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. But do you, Rex, you alluded to the coverage of the Clintons. You believe that the two cable networks, aside from Fox, were equally as aggressive? My recollection is that they didn't play it nearly as strongly as Fox.
I think you're right. Yeah. Definitely not as much.
So now the question is, will they, MSNBC and CNA, and go the route of Fox on the Ivanka story?
Right.
Which I think would be a mistake.
There's so much to pay attention to in the Trump administration. This one is hardly a huge one, so I think they won't.
Rex, may I just interrupt
Sir.
For a moment?
Okay?
We received a letter that was just handed to me by our producer, Speedy.
This Christina. Just in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It says,
breaking news.
Dear Alan, Ira, Rex, Judy, and everyone, I live in Maine and listen every week via podcast in my studio. I'm a painter. There must be a reason why the Media Project can't go for an hour. What is it? I feel if I know all of you very well, and I notice you just get going discussing something very interesting and engrossing, and then you have to stop, and one of you will say, I don't know why we can't go for an hour. Well, and then it goes on. Well, I think we should clear this up right now. I'm willing to
Her
hear.
Call.
Yeah. No, it's not my call.
It's not.
No. It's Rex's call.
Oh, it's Rex's call.
You're calling consultation with
Rex. Rex is the head of this program.
Oh, yeah.
And Rex
head.
Is very, very busy. He has about 11 different people reporting to him every day at the Times Union. And look, I would love to be here for an hour and talking with this. But the problem really is, just to be honest and to show the laundry, Rex doesn't show up on time. He always waits for the last minute to come bouncing in here. And so what we're going to do, get him up at 6 o'clock in the morning so he can be in here at 8 o'clock? He won't do it, I tell you. He won't do it.
Well, I mean, the difficulty is that we can't go for an hour because Alan has to go on to another program because he gets so little airtime on WAMC.
Yes.
So if he would agree to stay in this studio longer, but it would take him off the air for another show.
No,
so it's, Alan,
half,
it's Alan's
would,
fault,
We would
actually.
Start a half hour early.
It's not my fault. It's your fault.
I don't know, folks. It's really nice to hear people say this, but I think it would kind of destroy the rhythm of the program.
I don't know that you'd agree with me. I recall when we did the 1,000th show, which was a reunion show at the Linda, and we had participants past and present who were on the show.
We did that.
Right. Monty
and,
Trammer, who did the publisher
and
of
it was very entertaining, except that an hour was too long. Even with all those people, I think it ran out of steam there, the last part of it.
So. Well,
about a year from now, we're going to be at number 1,500.
Really?
So perhaps, you know, Alan and David will...
We'll
I think there's something we can tie in on that.
We'll have a celebration anyway. If we last that long,
it's all Rex's fault.
Yes, that's all we need to remember from this show.
This is just like the White House. You know, you just say something often enough, and people begin to believe it. It's tragic. What can you do?
I think to use the word of the year that Trump often uses, it's a disgrace.
Oh, it's a disgrace.
Yes, it's a disgrace.
It's fake news. All right. That, unfortunately, is all we have time for as we move into the holiday season. And we hope that you all stay safe out there on the icy roads that are part of the Northeast, because we are here on Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok, Ira Fussfeld, and Rex Smith, with gratitude to our producer, David Christina, even for that late-breaking letter. And thank you for joining us on The Media Project.
All newspapermen meet such interesting people, like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ding-a-ling, ding-a-ling, ling-a-ling, ling. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally the movies notwithstanding.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok is CEO of WAMC, Professor Emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Rex Smith is editor of the Times Union. and Ira Fussfeld is the publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
Newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the globe. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people.